Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded during the Bears-Vikings Monday Night Football game, it's time to Belichick Your Premises. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozdeski, and if you enjoy the Belichicking of your premises, please tell a friend so they can do the same. Joining me along this journey, Daniel T. Richards.
Yo, yo, yo. You on fire yet, bro?
No, everyone out there, I'm not playing NFL Blitz right now. I didn't just pick up a 30-yard... third down completion. What Daniel is referring to is currently Southern California is apparently on fire. East of me is a fire in Anaheim Hills, but I am not too worried about it because I am right outside Disney, and if Disney burns down, the world's going to end. So I know I'm like the last to go. So I'm not on fire yet.
Yeah. Disney's, you know, they've got their own private fire thing going. Like, there's no way they're letting Disney burn down. So. I mean, their fire thing is a moose and a mouse on a weird looking cart that pumps back and forth on a railroad track that sprays water. That's their fire department, but it's going to be effective.
The sad part is, he's really not kidding. That's really what would happen.
Yeah, that's what would happen. But it'd be totally effective, so it doesn't matter.
Speaking of things that seem absolutely ridiculous but really do happen, the Patriots beat the Buccaneers 19-14. On Thursday Night Football, and the Buccaneers kicker, after last season with all the dismal kicking they had, missed three field goals. And that's the first thing I want to talk to you about this week.
Because clearly, if he hadn't missed those field goals, they would have won the game, right? Justin?
That's exactly what I want to talk to you about. You're fucking Justin? Pissing me off by repeating it over and over again. You know exactly how to grind my gears.
This is not Family Guy fun.
That's what I want to talk to you about, is this narrative in sports that if things had happened differently, the game would have had a different outcome. Now, we talked about this a little bit last week at the end where that penalty was called against the Patriots and then they lost the game. But what I want to be clear about is that is something a lot different. That was they had a sack on third down. The third down would have ended the game. And then the penalty was called. And the drive continued. So that's much different. What we're talking about here is these are three field goals that were missed throughout the game. And then you're adding those 6 points up and say, oh, well, it would have been 20-19. That is nonsensical. Because the difference between a sport like baseball and football. Baseball, you can look at the... this cat. Oh, my God. Do you hear this cat over and over again right now?
Hashtag. Podcat.
This podcat will not be quiet. She just keeps yelling over and over again, and it's wrecking my train of thought. But no, when you're talking about baseball and the box score of baseball, you can read it and see exactly what happened in the inning, right? Where the ball was hit to in the field, who caught it. Seriously, stop whining. Okay, who caught it, you know, how the outs happened, all of those things, the pitch count, all of those things. But when you're looking at football, you can't, because there are decisions made contextually. And once one field goal is missed, that changes the way both teams call the game. So just because three field goals were missed doesn't mean that's the same strategy the Patriots would have taken. They're doing the strategy and making the decisions in the moment.
Yeah, situational football implies situations. And the context around which you make your calls. So to be clear, so we don't seem like homers, the point is that in the last game, had those penalties not been called, it would have been a greater likelihood that the Patriots would have won the game because they had a stop.
Saying the penalties in generally. I'm talking about that one specific penalty against the Panthers.
Yes. Yeah, that's fine.
The rest of the game.
That one specific penalty.
Right, the whole season we've talked about. I mean, it's happening every day. I mean, even in the Tampa game, those refs are out of control. Like the number, they were calling things that I've never seen called before. I mean, Midsider Michael was texting me going, what are these flags? I don't even know what these flags are. They literally called, what was it, unsportsmanlike? Because the guy, no, it wasn't unsportsmanlike. What was it? The guy ran off the field.
Unsportsmanlike conduct for running down the sidelines and then being the first guy enough.
And because he hit somebody, it was unsportsmanlike. I've never heard of that in my life, and I've been watching this game my whole life.
Yeah, so the point is that what you can say, if we're talking about rational football analysis, is the Patriots had a stop there, then a penalty was called, which was not actually a penalty, and if that had not been called, the likelihood that the outcome of the game is different is high. Doesn't mean that they necessarily win. It's completely different game if that happens.
What are you supposing they would have went for it on fourth down?
They might have. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm saying the likelihood is higher, but it doesn't necessarily change the outcome. But the likelihood is higher. The difference is in someone making a field goal, it's not as if then they get to try these other two field goals immediately following that, and then the game ends differently, right? The field goal happens, and then there's an entirely different series of plays that would have been called if that field goal had been made. And then if the second field goal had been made, there would have been an entirely different series of calls for that situation.
Right, and let's take the situation that did exist. Isn't the most logical thing to do in the situation that did exist where, after the second missed field goal, when we're in the fourth quarter, isn't the most logical thing to do a slower drive that burns more time and all you really need is a field goal versus if they made one or two field goals, then you have to push it and call plays quicker to try and score a touchdown?
Yes. Absolutely. So it's a different set of play calls for that situation. And that's the difference. It's sort of like the more discreet the situation, i.e. the more one-off the situation, the more you can say that directly affects the outcome of the game. The less discreet the situation, if he had made three different field goals, that is a less discreet situation. The less you can say that that would have affected the outcome of the game because you're neglecting all of the context between those actions.
Right, and the way I would say that in a less
a
esoteric way.
A super discreet
way.
Point.
Right.
In a less nerdy way, did you say?
Right, a less esoteric way, a less nerdy way. I would just say a lot of shit happened in between the three missed field goals, so you can't take them as a bundle.
Yeah. Not a package deal.
Right, exactly. To make it nerdier again. But do you get what I'm saying as how I'm simplifying this here?
Yeah. I liked my way better, but yeah.
Well, no, and that's the thing. People are trying to simplify it, and they're oversimplifying it. Like, it's just, you see this every week, right? And you see this with the comparisons of week-to-week teams, too, right? Like, and this is a big thing with the Patriots this year, right? Oh, the Patriots must be bad because they've lost two games, and, you know, look how they've lost them, blah, blah, blah. Or we can even talk about the Texans this week. Like, let's look at the Texans record. I think the Texans are a perfect example of this on a long scale, season long arc, right? The Texans are 2-3.
Yes.
But look who they've played and look who two of their losses are to, and look how close two of those losses were, right? They lost to the Patriots and they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs, who are world beaters right now. The Kansas City Chiefs are on fire.
Yeah.
So can you really say the Texans are a bad team? No, because we're only five games in.
Sample size is not big enough to say they're a bad team because you also have to look at their performance, right? So Deshaun Watson threw five touchdowns against a very good Kansas City defense. That's an incredible performance. If your offense scores 34 points and you lose the game, that wasn't the offensive side's fault. And at the beginning of the Texans game, you lost Merciless and you lost Watts, right?
J.J. Watt, both for the season.
Both for the season, yeah. So, like, bad injuries. So that severely affected the defensive game, play calling for this game.
Game planning is what you meant to say.
That's all of that is what I meant to say.
Yeah, the game plan was altered because you game plan versus, again, situationally, versus the based on the players that are on the field. And when your two big players leave, it kind of changes your entire. I mean, we saw this, like, dude, I mean, the Chiefs look, here's something that is really tough for me as a narrative, and I don't know how to deal with this, but this is a narrative, and it's not necessarily the sport itself. We saw this with the Broncos when they won their last Super Bowl, where it's just everything seemed to work out for the Broncos, right? Every week we're like, there's no way this can keep it up. So they keep winning by the skin of their teeth, but they did it all the way to the Super Bowl championship, all the way to the Lombardi. The Chiefs are kind of developing that narrative right now. I mean, how much good luck do they have that Hightower got hurt going into the fourth quarter against the Patriots and then against the Texans in Texas, in Houston, with their rookie quarterback who's on fire? In the first quarter, the Texans lose their top two defenders, J.J. Watt and Merciless.
Yeah.
It seems like everything's gangbusters for the Chiefs right now.
Yeah, so your point is well taken. I will say that trying to look at the Chiefs objectively, there are things that are doing really well. So one is that Alex Smith is having a career year, which, looking at Alex Smith's career, comes out of fucking nowhere. Because he's not Tom Brady. Or as someone, what did one of the commentators say last night? Good thing, what did they say? Man, that off-season trade for Aaron Rodgers is really paying off for the Chiefs. That's what they said. Being a little tongue-in-cheek, but the idea basically being like, he looks like Aaron Rodgers is playing this year as well. Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind this year, too. Is that sustainable? For the Chiefs' sake, I hope so. But there is something where, and this was something you said to me really early on in watching football, in a year where the Patriots were sort of, I forget what year it was, but they were basically doing gangbusters in the early part of the year. You basically said, we're peaking too soon. That's what you said to me. And I thought, what? What the fuck does that mean? But the idea is, like, you do want to get into a rhythm. You want to get into this groove. You want to be comfortable executing your game plans. But if you're doing it too early, there's a risk you're going to burn that out. And I think that's the Chiefs' biggest risk at this point in the season, is that they're not doing well. We're talking about pacing on a game level and pacing on a season level. They're not doing well pacing on a season level at the moment.
Well, that's the big story with Andy Reid always. And that lines up with an Andy Reid narrative. How many seasons did his teams look amazing and then they crapped out all the way at the end of the season? I mean, the worst of all was when they crapped out in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, where Donovan McNabb just couldn't handle the pressure and that Eagles team couldn't handle that final drive. So they lasted all the way to then, and then they buckled. But previously to that, the Bears just faked a punt, by the way. The punter just threw it, and the guy just ran for a touchdown.
Oh.
So
nice. Good job, Bears.
So I think, does the punter now have the most touchdown passes for anyone on the Bears right now?
Yes. Certainly it's not Mitch Trubisky.
Definitely the best.
Traded up for. I want to point that out.
Well, they traded up for him and they signed the other guy for like $15 million, right?
Yeah, Glennon.
Yeah, Glennon. Right. But this guy definitely has the best touchdown to interception ratio on the Bears.
That's right.
Ever.
That was a nice pass, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about nice pass. He was very flat-footed. I could tell it was the punter. I looked up and I was like, wait, that's the punter throwing that ball. That's not a quarterback.
Yeah. Anyway, now... You have the Texans.
What was
right,
I saying? Who, I was saying something else. Oh, yeah, the
Donovan
Andy Reid narrative.
Chiefs,
yeah,
Andy Reid narrative.
The Andy Reid narrative. Yeah, and before that with the Eagles, how many times did they get to the NFC? Was it four times in a row they got to the NFC Championship and they only won once?
Yeah.
So Andy Reid has a history of this. He has a history of game mismanagement at the end, too, clock mismanagement. So yeah. Chiefs fans, You have the best team in the league right now. That's inarguable, right? That offense is, like, scary good. And the defense is good, too. But although, I will say this, the defense has given up a lot of points. Not as many as the Patriots, but they're still giving up a lot of points, right? You give up five touchdown passes to Deshaun Watson. You know I love Watson. You know I think he's good. You know I think if he can stay healthy with the way he's cut down on interceptions, I think that, I'm going to say this right now, he might be the next great quarterback. I'm saying that. But... Yeah. The Chiefs still, you still have to worry about it, the Andy Reid narrative. Can you last the entire season? And that's what Daniel's saying about the peaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Texans, maybe their record looks worse than their performance. Now let's turn to a team whose record looks better than their performance. And I would say that that's the Steelers right now. The Steelers' media narrative going into this season was, who can stop the Steelers' offense? because you ben have Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger, Martavis Bryant, Heath Miller, and or he still on the team?
No,
basically
you
just
have
this incredible arrangement of people who can catch the ball and Le'Veon Bell, who's arguably the best running back in football, although Kareem Hunt right now is blowing away in terms of numbers. But the point being, the media narrative was who can stop the Steelers offense, and the Steelers record is 3-2. But I think if you look at the performances of the Steelers on a game-to-game basis, their performance is much worse than what their record would indicate. So week one, they barely beat the Browns, 21-18. And then week two, they sort of blow out the Vikings 26-9, although for a blowout, 26 points, and not that great of a blowout. Then they lose to the Bears. The Bears are terrible. Okay. In week three, they sort of, quote-unquote, blow out the Ravens again, 26-9. Again, 26 points. Not a huge blowout for an unstoppable offense. And then this week, they get decimated by the Jaguars when Ben Roethlisberger throws 5 interceptions. 5 of them. So this is another thing where, you know, the teams they've played, the Browns, Vikings, Bears, Ravens, and then finally a good team in the Jaguars, sort of don't give you a good indicator for this team because we're only 5 games into the season. But if you look at performances, I think it's clear to me that the Steelers' record is better than their talent at the moment.
Well, I was being very tongue-in-cheek when I was saying Ben Roethlisberger, but it really is Ben Roethlisberger. Did you see what he said after the game?
Maybe I just don't have it anymore.
Right.
That's what he said.
That is indicative of someone who is not mentally checked into this season. And then you add in the trouble that Antonio Brown was in the locker room before the AFC Championship game last year. This is just a team that just doesn't have the cohesion. They don't have the locker room that they need. And this is one of the narratives that's never talked about and never told. Is it's not just about the talent you have on the field. It's about what kind of a mentality you have. Is the locker room toxic or not? And I would argue that with Roethlisberger saying that kind of thing and throwing 5 interceptions, and I want to point out 2 of those were pick sixes. And I watched those highlights. Some of those were really bad throws, really, really bad throws. I'm not talking about like Prescott's interception where it bounced off the receiver's hands and got returned for a touchdown. Like, I don't blame Dak Prescott for that at all. I blame the receiver. That touchdown the Packers scored, that was on the Dallas receiver. That's not on Prescott. I'm not talking about that. I mean, these are just throws to bad spots where there was nobody.
Yeah.
So if Roethlisberger is like that and has that mentality, doesn't that create a toxic locker room?
Toxic masculine locker room, yes.
I would not say masculine, but...
Oh, I heard... Whenever I hear the word toxic, I hear masculinity, so... Yeah, you're right. It's about leadership. It's about character. And remember that there was a big joke before the start of the season where Ben Roethlisberger said, hey, I'm considering retiring after the really bad, I mean, it wasn't super bad, but the bad loss to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. And everyone thought that was just, oh, ha, Ben Roethlisberger, blah, blah, blah. But maybe you should have taken it a little bit more seriously. Maybe he knows something about himself and about his performance and his ability that people don't have an insight into. I don't want to be speculative in the sense that I don't want to say that this is happening, but I will say that historically speaking, we've said this before on the show, quarterbacks don't gradually go. When a quarterback loses their ability, it's just gone. Peyton Manning went from setting touchdown records to literally not helping his team, like in the entirety of the season, basically in 1 year. Like, it was just gone.
And ask Daniel, I am so aware of this that I am watching Brady down to the throw to know when the throw is going to happen where he loses it. I will text him and call him during games and be like, is that it? Is he done? Like, what was it? Was it an interception? It was the interception against the Buccaneers, right? Where it was like way off from Hogan, like completely missed the target.
It was high.
And I was like, is he old? Is that it? Is Brady done? Like, this is how hyper aware I am of this.
Yes. And it happens, and it's you know, Brady is sort of defying Father Time at the moment, but other quarterbacks are not going to defy Father Time, and Ben Roethlisberger is not a spring chicken. So,
well, I want to actually add to this theory for you for Roethlisberger.
Good things. but it's not going to last forever. So go ahead.
Yeah, the theory I want to add is I want to add the mental thing in here. And people are going to be like, oh, you know, you're just like shining, licking Brady's boots or whatever. But if you're Ben Roethlisberger and you've played this whole career and you've won 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And then there's one team you can't beat, and that's the Patriots, right? So the Patriots have certain teams they can't beat, right? They cannot go to Denver and win in Mile High. Something always goes wrong. It's just they miss an extra point, and it blows the whole season, right? Something will always go wrong. Or the really long interception return that Ben Watson did stop, but they didn't call it a stop. This something always goes wrong. But conversely, there's a team they always beat, and it's the Steelers. No matter how good the Steelers are, they just have the Steelers' number. So if you're Ben Roethlisberger and you've got this offense that's supposedly unstoppable, and you go into Foxborough and you get demolished, and you've won 2 Super Bowls, and you're old, and you see what Antonio Brown's doing in the locker room, and you see the problems Mike Tomlin is bringing to this team with his mentality, why would you mentally still be checked in at his age? What do you have to continue to play for? Especially if you don't believe you can actually get over that hurdle one more time. Why continue? And I think that's a lot of what's going on with him.
Yeah, it's a good point. Wasn't this something that you worried about with Brady at the beginning of the year too? Like, what does he have to play for anymore?
I do still kind of worry about with that, because I had a feeling after the Super Bowl where I was like, okay, that was Brady's curtain call. Like, there's nothing to do anymore. Like, what is there left to accomplish? 1-5 Super Bowls, has the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. Like, that game will never be topped. That is the game that Tom Brady will be remembered for. So everything after, this is his curtain call. This is his epilogue. So what does he have to keep playing? And I do wonder with the Patriots' performance this season, if the team has lost a little bit of that edge they had, right? They always had this New England versus the world edge, and they don't seem to have that anymore. And inversely or conversely, that's what Kansas City seems to have. That's what that's what Green Bay seems to have. That's what Denver had when they won the Super Bowl. And that's just an important thing to look for, that edge.
From a rhetorical and marketing perspective, I noticed, for instance, that it's just not the slogan for this year that the Patriots have embraced, the whole blitz for 6 thing, is nowhere near as compelling as last year's one more. Every game was one more. We have one more. And that whole thing, finally get to the Super Bowl, it's like one more. It's like, oh, you did it! Oh, now there's another year! What happened to the one more thing? No, it's blitz for 6.
Right, even that had a sense of finality to it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, once you accomplished that, it felt like, okay, yes, done. The end. It's like, oh no, everyone's coming back. Because we're going to do this again. Because that's the nature of football. It's a never-ending cycle. But the point is that psychologically, it's hard to get up for that. And I don't know if that's what we're seeing, or if it's just team building or whatever it is. But
well, Belichick was always very
different.
Yeah, it's different because Brady's different. And Belichick was always able to turn the roster over and say, this is a new year and we still have something to play for, because Brady always had something to play for. And he's let us believe so far that he still has something to play for. And we would want to believe that because he's Tom Brady. But haven't you noticed that all the games sort of like the Patriots don't really turn it on until the fourth quarter now? Because it's just sort of like, well, we don't need to play before that. We have Tom Brady. And maybe Tom Brady's thinking that a little bit now. I'm not saying it's intentional. I'm not saying it's conscious. Have you also
noticed?
I was just going to say, in general, have you noticed the rash of comebacks in football now? Like in college football, everyone's doing these ridiculous fourth quarter comebacks, or they're almost doing it. Like, I got a text from Midsider William. I texted him. I was like, wow, Ohio State and Michigan lost in the same game, in the same weekend. And he's like, yeah, we tried to do a Patriots in the Super Bowl. We just screwed it up. You know, we did everything except a couple things of, you know, stopping them completely and scoring every time. It's like, now that people saw that happening, they believe they can do it themselves, which that's the power of art and the power of sport, is seeing that.
Yeah.
I do believe it changes the psychology.
It does, totally. Adam Kroll points this out with, like, X Games, where it's like certain moves that people on bicycles did. I don't know what the moves are. I'm not going to pretend. But, like, it was like, oh, that's impossible. No one can do that. And then they do it. And then the next year, every 14-year-old is doing it at home. Because there's a blueprint now. They see how you do it.
Right. It's the same thing with the comeback. Now people, you know, you used to believe when you were down that much that it wasn't possible. But now that people see it's possible, they don't quit. It's a mental thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I used to joke that Belichick was basically just bored. And so he would, you know, put themselves in these ridiculous situations to see if he could get out of it by the fourth quarter. But it actually leads me to think of, like, what you're saying is, like, the Patriots are like that guy who's watched too much hardcore porn. And basically now he needs, like, you know, Japanese schoolgirls strangling each other with Hello Kitty ropes in order to get off.
Wait, that's hardcore porn? Quarter. I thought that was just normal porn.
You just thought that was normal porn?
Well, yeah. When I put in Asians, that's what comes up.
You just refer to that as the porn?
Yeah.
Yeah, but now they need these hardcore fourth quarter comeback craziness in order to feel anything.
I do think there's I think it's Brady specifically, there's a little bit of that. Like, think about it. If you've won five Super Bowls, and you see this, honestly, this is why Watson's so good. You know, Watson won in high school. He won in college. He played the college national title twice. Once you play in those big moments, how do you get up for the other ones? And you just, they're just not normal things. We're talking about September games, early October games. How does the first quarter, first half, the first three quarters in an early September, early October game matter? I mean, it's like when you have sex with that really hot girl one time, and then it's like, oh, well, if I picked her up, I don't have to get nervous about picking anyone up ever again. It changes everything.
Yep. Yep. But conversely, it can become the Adam Carolla, Richard Gere theory, right? Which is,
once you shove a gerbil up your ass, it's nothing's fun anymore? Like, what's
well, no, he totally believes that Richard Gere did shove the gerbil up his ass, because after you've had sex with young Cindy Crawford, like, you just need more and more and more to get off. So,
right.
That's the point. Yeah. This show went in a weird direction. All right. Back to the foosball.
Well, who else do you think is legitimately good this year? That's what I want to know.
Are the Broncos by himself? Are the Broncos legitimately good? Hard to tell. Small sample size. Trevor Siemian seems to be athletic and much more accurate than one would expect him to be. And that defense is pretty darn good. So that team is a bit dangerous, certainly. Who is legitimately good? Aaron Rodgers by himself is legitimately good. The team around him is sort of hit or miss. But, you know, I don't say enough things, nice things about Aaron Rodgers, so here I go. Watching this game against Dallas, Dallas isn't the team they were last year, so it's not as impressive. But the comeback that he made with, like, a minute on the clock was phenomenal. Just, he was unbelievably accurate on that entire drive through passes that could only be caught by his receivers. And that's the mark to me of an excellent quarterback. So,
yeah, I felt really bad for Dallas fans. Really bad. Because they went down and scored with, like, what, a minute 30 left? And it's like, oh, yeah, we got this game.
Yeah, they did. They had a solid drive down the field. Dak Prescott, I think, ran it in or something at the end there. It was awesome. But once they left, like, a minute 10 on the clock, it was like, oh, no, you're fucked.
Do you think it was Dak Prescott, like, dials Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers at night or text them, and he's just like, would you just retire already? Retire.
It's my time now.
Like, Dak Prescott and Watson need to get together and figure out a way to trick Rodgers and Brady into retiring. That's what those two need to do.
Yes, you're eating into our time, bitches. Yeah, so I sort of felt like that Texans fan who was sitting next to me on the plane when the Texans left way too much time on the clock for Brady, and he was just like, oh, it's over. You guys, Patriots win. Like, what? Like, yeah, you left too much time on the clock. Brady's going to score. That's how I felt with Aaron Rodgers. Like, oh, you left Aaron Rodgers a minute 10 and angry? No, you're fucked. Sorry. You're screwed.
You left Aaron Rodgers a minute 10 and angry without Olivia Munn? Oh, he's going to score, no problem.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I think they're good. The LA Rams lost again this week, 16-10, but the Seahawks always play them hard. That's a division game. Hard to tell. They looked worse this week. They've been the number one scoring offense, but Jared Goff turned a little bit into a pumpkin this week, but we'll see where that goes. Jacksonville Jaguars, I think, are better than their 3-2 record, and that's saying something. I don't know how far Blake Bortles can carry the team. But you know who can carry the team is their defense and Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette is a monster. He's probably the second best running back in the league right now behind Kareem Hunt. He's just shockingly good. And then on the other side, in the NFC, Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz! Man, he decimated the Cardinals there, and I think the Eagles look like a scary team. So I think the Eagles are legit NFC contenders for the Super Bowl. Which it would be really sad to see Philadelphia win a Super Bowl, because then they just wouldn't be as chippy as they are. I like a chippy Philadelphia.
One of my few joys in life is getting the Eagles hyped and then have them lose. That's why Andy Reid was such a fit in Philadelphia. Yes. Mm-hmm. A couple teams you haven't mentioned that I think are important to mention. Well, three teams, sure. NFC teams here. The Redskins, the Lions, mm-hmm. and the Falcons have all looked impressive at different stretches this season so far.
Yeah. I would say that better than all of them, right now at least, Carolina.
Well, yeah, Carolina's winning that division. Yeah.
Yes. Again, how much they sustain that, not entirely sure. But they had an impressive win over the Lions. Yeah, good there. One other thing I want to say, where's the team I wanted to say something about? Oh, the Giants.
I thought you were going to go, Odell.
The incredible bad luck that the Giants had in this game. Losing Sterling Shepard, Brandon Marshall, and Odell Beckham Jr., possibly all to season-ending injuries. That's incredibly bad luck. But it couldn't happen to a dopier face. Yeah.
The last thing I want to add on before we sort of close out here is the number of 3-2 and 2-3 teams this year is absurd. And that means there's a lot of football left to play, and a lot of this stuff that the media is throwing around, we don't really know yet. The only team that's really far ahead of everyone is the Chiefs, because they're 5-0. But even there, they're only two games ahead of the 3-2 teams for the number one seed. So if you look at it, the Broncos are 3-1, the Chiefs are 5-0, and like every other team is 3-2 or 2-3. So really, any team in the AFC besides like the 0-5 Cleveland Browns and the 1-4 Chargers, and we'll just say the cocaine-sniffing Miami Dolphins, any other team besides them can really get the number one seed in the AFC. That's still up for grabs.
Yes, absolutely. And I will say that I prefer seasons when more teams are good. To me, that's more exciting. When there's actual stakes, and it's not just, oh, these two or three teams are just going to run over everyone else. I mean, clearly it's fun when my team runs over everyone else. But the point is, I like the disparity. I like the not knowing and having a little bit more anxiety about it. It makes it feel more entertaining to me at the end of the day.
I like dominance, so I like seeing the Chiefs playing right now. I enjoy what Aaron Rodgers is doing. I'm going to see if he keeps it up. The one thing I really want to see, and this is just a personal bias thing, I want to see how the wheels are going to come off the Bills and the Jets, because we already saw what just happened with the Dolphins. They're done, right? Like, that's a season-ending controversy right there. Like, you don't overcome that. Like, that franchise is mired in controversy now. I mean, they already lost their quarterback. Now their offensive line coach is in love with a hooker. Like, it's just, it's done. So I'm just waiting for the Jets and the Bills to fall apart.
Yeah. The Bills might be a little harder. The Jets are pretty primed for a fall apart. I mean, they eked past the Browns, so.
Well, we'll see this
weekend. Browns,
the
only 0-5. Oh, no, there are two 0-5 teams. Sorry, the Giants and the Browns. But
right.
Yeah. You know, one last final note of teams who are better than their record, the San Francisco 49ers. Hate to say it, don't like to say anything nice about San Francisco, that leftist fuck of a city. But they've lost, like, all five of their games by a total combined 11 points. Like, they're actually been very close in all of their games, and it just sort of eked out on the other side. And in this case, Jacoby Brissett led them down the field in overtime to kick a field goal. So,
oh, man, like, how many quarterbacks did the Patriots have? That's all I'm going to say.
All the quarterbacks. So it's a good season of football so far. There's so much more to play, and I'm really excited about it.
All right, where can people talk to you about that?
You can talk to me about football anytime at Daniel T. Richards on Twitter or Instagram. Or if you're super friendly, you can friend me on Facebook at DT Richards.
You can find me on all the social medias as The Midside. That's where I promote our main show, our flagship show, Welcome to The Midside. Yeah, that's Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, The Midside. And if you want our main show, you can find it on themidside.com or iTunes. You could already be there. If you're listening to this in the iTunes feed, the main show is one of the other shows. So check that out.
Click on over. It's great. Yeah.
Thanks for checking in with us this week. For now, though, we're on to the New York Jets.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.